Hi everybody, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carroll. Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Banter team. One of the best experiences we've had with Banter in 2015 was a Bloom in the Phoenix Park in Dublin, where we took over a tent in the Food Village for 3 days of talking and interviews. We started off the weekend with this one, Rural Ireland Rules OK, a discussion featuring Damien O'Reilly from RT Radio 1's Countrywide, Mairead Lavery from the Farmers Journal on Irish Country Living, and Pat Lawler from Ballad Organic Farm and Kilbegan Organic Foods, discussing many of the issues which rural Ireland faces at the moment. My name is Jim Carroll. I'm the producer and interviewer at Banter. So over the next today, tomorrow and Monday, we're just going to be doing a series of talks, discussions and interviews about a whole range of things. Later on today, we'll be talking to Gary Graham about how you put together a show like Bloom. We'll also be talking to Evelyn Cusack and Damien Cordes about the weather forecast. There'll also be a discussion later on about charities and what's the current state of the charity landscape in Ireland. And we're starting off this morning with a discussion on rural Ireland. We'll begin that in about 2 or 3 minutes. So please sit down, make yourself comfortable, grab some ice cream outside, and we'll reach you in a few minutes. Thank you.
Okay,
we're ready to start now. So I'm just going to introduce the panel first of all. On my immediate left, we've got Damien O'Reilly, who's presenter of RT Radio 1's Countrywide. In Man in the Green Jumper is a late addition to the panel. It's Pat Lawler from Kilbegan Foods and Kilbegan Farms. And last but not least, we've got Mairead Lavery from the Farmers Journal. So please give him a round of applause. I mean, this is the first of the kind of the banter at Bloom in the Park discussions. This was prompted by two things. One was Richard Curran's documentary on rural Ireland a couple of months ago on RT, and more recently we had the incoming Mark and the Farmer President, Sean Finnan, talking about the decimation of rural Ireland. So when we were putting these together, we kind of decided it might be a good idea to actually to discuss some of those issues around rural Ireland. I mean,
Sound much like banter, does it?
It does. You see, Mairead, it does, because it's like, I mean, when people think of rural Ireland, they think of different things. You know, I mean, Damien was making a point to me earlier on that, like, the farming is kind of like, it's so key to rural Ireland. But, like, to an awful lot of people as well, it's about other things as well. There's other jobs going on. I mean, one of the things I want to start with, I suppose, is kind of like the geographical lopsided nature of kind of Ireland. Like, the fact that all the development is in the east, all the development is in kind of around Dublin. Do you think, Mairead, I mean, that's something that can ever be tackled?
I absolutely do, and one of the ways to tackle it is to stop pretending that broadband is a luxury that people need to get Netflix on. It's not. It's like electricity. It's absolutely as important. And no more than you'd expect to have flickering electricity when you're watching the telly at night or doing your washing, you can't have flickering broadband. The numbers of people who could actually have their businesses, successful businesses in rural Ireland, if we had proper speed and speedy and reliable broadband, absolutely would open the place up. When I hear people talking about remote rural Ireland, Mongolia is remote, right? The middle of the Sahara Desert is remote. Somewhere that's 30 minutes off a motorway is anything but remote. And it's a bloody mindset as far as I'm concerned, because you can choose to see everything negative or you can choose to see all the incredible positive stuff that's going on. And so much of it is. So get us good, fast broadband.
Okay, so you've identified broadband, but you also kind of identified a mindset. And that mindset, Pat, I mean, when you were, like, talk a little bit about Kilbegan. You know, you were telling me earlier on about, like, I mean, the fact that your son's come back from Melbourne to work with you. That's a kind of a job plus for Kilbegan and Westmeath and for rural Ireland. Tell us a bit about, like, I mean, your mindset behind setting up the business and where you went with it.
Well, basically, I suppose throughout the 90s and so on, I was very heavily involved in fattening cattle in the beef end of farming, and it really wasn't very profitable. So I had 4 children that I thought needed to be educated, and I decided I had to do something to increase my income. So I changed to organic farming in 1999, not to save the world, but to try and increase my income. And that has happened. That has worked out. And to go really fast forward, I've added value to what I'm doing in terms of my products, sufficiently that one of my family members has actually come back from having been in Melbourne for 7 years to take over the business, well, gradually, you know, which is really, you know, it's the icing on the cake as far as I'm concerned. So, but if you're just stuck in the same rut of farming, doing the same thing day in, day out, and don't look beyond that and don't challenge yourself, the young people will run away from it, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that, like, Damon, again, that's something we were talking about earlier as well. The fact is that most kids who are growing up on farms, they're not going to stay working on the farms. They're going to go away. I mean, aside from what Maria was talking about broadband, it's interesting that she kind of highlighted that first and foremost. What are the other issues that we kind of that are supposed to taking people away from rural Ireland?
Well, I mean, it's always been happening. I mean, I wouldn't be here if my father and mother didn't come from the country up to Dublin. It's been happening for generations and generations that people leave the countryside and they come to the cities. They migrate towards the cities. But I kind of agree with Mairead. Sometimes we can be overly negative. I mean, rural depopulation is not an Irish thing. It's all across Europe. I was speaking about this with some European journalistic colleagues recently. One of them told me that they had a formal closing down of a village in Holland a couple of years ago. It officially closed down. The local government had decided no longer were they going to provide services to it because nobody was living there. They had moved away. But I think this may sound very boring, but I think farming remains the backbone and the heartbeat of rural Ireland. If you go through a lot of small towns, the worst thing that I hate seeing, and it's when you come off the motorways, and the motorway structure is fantastic, but it sucked the lifeblood out of a lot of small rural towns. And you go through and you see shop fronts closed up. It's terrible. Just like tumbleweed is all you're missing rolling down the street. But once you go either side of those, you see green fields, you see cattle grazing, you see at this time of the year a lot of crops growing. They are working viable farms, making money, providing households with income, providing other local businesses then with income, because farmers are renowned for spending money locally. You know, they don't siphon it away and spend
but
it somewhere
else.
As well
as that, Justin, or what's happened, Damien, is that, I mean, an organisation that doesn't get anything like the credit it should get is the LEADER programme and the work that it's done across 38 counties and geographic areas around rural Ireland. LEADER has been in operation for 20 years. And I'll just give you one example, Ballyhara development. Ballyhara is on East Limerick, North Cork area. The biggest town is a place called Kilfinan. It's got, 15 years ago, it had something like 50 derelict sites. When they went out to communities asking for projects that might be funded or supported, the communities couldn't think of anything. They came up with 3 in total. 15 years later, there's only 3 derelict sites in Kilfinan. It's got an absolute international reputation with the whole mountain biking and the trails. It's got multiple, something like 1,600 jobs created purely in the food businesses.
Is that under pressure though now, Mairead, because it's been politicised? LEADER now is going under the control
of
county councils.
Typical with us in Ireland, once something is succeeding, we try and mess around with it. Or once something is succeeding, everybody wants to be its author.
Yeah.
And there has been a move now for the county councils, the local authorities, to come in and take over. But it looks to be what's happening is they're coming in partnership with the LEADER companies. But they have been hugely instrumental in turning things around with community services, because people don't just want a job in rural Ireland. They want it to be a good place to live. And whether that's going for an espresso or having a good mother and toddlers group or Pilates classes or a community hall that you can go into and be comfortable in and not freeze at it. I mean, all of those things matter. And that's what the like of LEADER has been doing right across the board. And not just in enterprise, but in community services as well.
Can I just go back to the farming thing, though, Jim? Pat will be able to talk more maybe about this. But see, the age profile of farmers in Ireland, there's more farmers over 80 than under 35. Is that right, Mairead? Something like
that. That's about land ownership.
Yes.
And it's like kind of saying your head's in the fire and your feet's in the fridge, so on average you're all right. You know, it's the same kind of difference.
But it's
the ownership. That's where the ownership structure is. It's not exactly where the practical farming is going on.
No, but I mean, at the same time, that land is going to have to be farmed into the future. So all of those older farmers are going to have to find ways of transferring that land, whether they have a successor or not.
The government has been very good in terms of the leasing arrangements now. And the tax-free kind of lease income from it. If you go for longer than the 1 year, the 11-month system, if you go for 5, 10, 15, 20 years leasing, Mocra with Austin Finn has a really good land mobility service. And what they're finding is there's more people wanting to give up their land than there are people to take
on. Okay, but the problem, and this is a point we were making earlier, Jim, and the Chagas figures show that over half of Irish farms have another form of income.
Yeah.
Maybe Pat falls under that. You have another form of income. For a lot of older farmers, they are full-time farmers, but they're only earning less than 20,000 a year from the farm. But that keeps them going. So in order to attract somebody back to the farm, they have to have some form of off-farm employment. Where are they going to get it if the big multinationals or where, you know, the creators of jobs are not going to actually...
But it's not the multinationals in rural Ireland that create the jobs. It's the medium-sized, the medium and small-sized enterprises. We have a bakery down... I come from Shanagolan. And up the road from us, there's Carney's Bakery. Three sisters set it up about 20 years ago, doing their mother's stuff. You know, apple tarts and queen cakes. And you could pass it off as your own, 100%. Take the package off it. I've done it loads of times. They're employing 22 people in that bakery. They could have gone multiple to the multiple stores.
Okay.
They're supplying three parishes.
But the point I was going to make was, without you're not going to get that. That day is gone, or the big, you know, factories coming into rural
Absolutely.
Areas,
and
or the big meat factory employing 800 people in Rooski or whatever. But it's the likes of the Pats of this world that are going to be creating those jobs.
In terms of like creating those jobs, where is the encouragement coming from, Pat? I mean, it strikes me from what you've been saying earlier on that it's come from yourself.
Yeah, that's the point of, that I was hoping to get to make. You know, you've got to go and do it for yourself, and communities have to do it for themselves. Yeah. For example, Damien, you talked rightly about the motorway structure we have, which is brilliant, and it bypasses my local village of Kilbeggan. And everyone was saying, isn't it awful, isn't it awful? And the place did go into decline. But now the community has got a new life, right? And it has been creative in itself in order to survive. If you take, there's a distillery museum in Kilbeggan. I mean, Kilbeggan is a one-horse town, village, just a big village. There are 55,000 people go through that distillery in Kilbeggan. And there's nothing else to bring busloads in there but that distillery. And that distillery and the dream of it was kept alive by the local community. Now, it's owned by a multinational now that are producing whiskey people from Japan. But the local community kept that going for the last 40 years when there was really nothing going on. So people can do a lot for themselves. And just in general about young people staying on farms and so on, we have a very good opportunity for access to education in Ireland, both at teenage level and so on, and at adult level. And I'm an example of that. I went back to college the same day as my eldest daughter, and that's not that long ago. So, like, you've got to get up and do it yourself. You can't, I mean, Murray talked about leader, and that's great, and I've been supported by leader. But you can't be waiting for a leader to come from somewhere. You've got to get up off your backside and think, what can I do? What are my resources? Have I land? Have I a skill? Have I a place that I can take in tours? You know, so we've got to really look outside the traditional thinking about farming.
And but that's a mentality as well. And like, is that mentality widespread?
Yeah, but farmers are multi-skilled. They don't realise it. I mean, most people are in, you know, PAYE jobs. They get told what to do. You know, 9 to 5, got your holidays, you got a routine. But the book stops with a farmer. They have to take everything on. They have to do the managerial role, the labourer's role. They have to do every part of the cycle. And they really don't give themselves the credit for the skill set that
they
have.
I don't think they get the credit either, Murray, to
be
honest with you.
No, they probably don't. No. And we've got a kind of this new dependency.
Of course, down through the years, farmers were made to feel sorry for themselves.
Yeah.
Because the main farm organisation always moaned about how badly off farmers were. And people who are not farming sort of have that attitude towards farmers. They're always complaining.
Yeah.
So if that's been fed into you all the time, it's very easy to say, oh, yeah, I'm a victim here. But you've got to forget about being a victim, you know, and get up and do it.
Okay, I mean, that's a very interesting kind of point. So, like, I'm curious about the mentality, because when you're talking about Kilbeggan and you're talking about what you've done there, it's very obvious, you know, you had this kind of initiative, you had the will to do it. Like, is this the kind of, is that kind of will teachable? I mean, is that something you can actually teach people? Is it an education process that has to be gone by? I mean, where can we have more people like Pat Lawler out there?
Well, I make a very strong distinction between education and qualification. Right, there are a lot of qualified people out there, and they're not very well educated. And there are people, neighbours of mine, that never passed sixth class, and they're very well educated. Right, so we want to always be careful. I bring my own children down.
There's a line in John B. Keyes. There's a line in John B. Keyes, The Field, and I heard Michael Harden do it in the Gaiety the other night, and he says, "Us that's ignorant has to be clever."
Right.
Well, so it's a good line.
If you take my own case, and a lot of people of my age, and I now have the travel pass. Right, we actually just drifted into farming. I never got a job. I never went for an interview. Right, I've never been anywhere else except on my farm at home.
But things have changed now. You cannot qualify for the single farm payment unless you have some form of third level.
Okay, but even without qualifying for benefits like that, we have a great education system. And there's a neighbour of mine says, if you want to keep your children at home on the farm, keep them stupid. Now, that doesn't apply anymore. But let them have their education, let them go to third level, and let them, if they want to, feck off across the world, let them off.
Okay, but
they'll come back better people.
I tell you, and this, you know, I'm a non-farmer, but this would really annoy people that are not in agriculture. But, Mairead, as you know, I've travelled all over the country over the last 15 years. I was on your farm in the early days. I mean, on farms once a week, interviewing farmers about the time of year or whatever for our program. And there was always three things. And I would say 95% of the farms, if I went back through it and scientifically recorded it, there are three things that are very important, I think, to farmers. And I don't know whether this stands to them and keeps them kind of... Number one, the family always, the children that have gone, whether they come from a big farm, a small farm, all have good jobs. They've all got well-educated. Now, people will say, well, don't they get free education? That's a different argument. But having said that, whatever work ethic is there on farms, the children of farmers all do well. They're doctors, they're all sorts of things. The second thing is, you go into a farmhouse, there's a very strong faith. Seldom I go into a farm kitchen that the Sacred Heart isn't hanging up there. I don't know whether it's the last resort every day to pray for something. And the third thing is, you will always be brought into a farmhouse. You can't leave without being brought in. So I'm just saying there are three kernel parts of rural Ireland that are still very strong, and that is a strong faith, a strong work ethic, and generosity. And it runs, I'd say 99% of the time, farmers that I go and visit, they're three common denominators. I don't know what that says.
Yeah, well, I don't know either. I think that's an Irish thing as well, because...
It's a rural Ireland thing. It's very much, and this is what we're talking about, you know, it's still that they are three threads that still run very strong in rural Ireland that probably don't exist in other professions or in urban Ireland.
Yeah, well, maybe part of it is, and this is an example in my own case, like a lot of farmers work on their own all day, every day. And if it wasn't for the blinking radio and the phone, a lot of us would be gone mad. Now, I can take that because I've always lived with it.
Yeah.
But my children won't take that. They can't stand that isolation. So I think maybe where this is coming from, Damien, what you've described is we love to have visitors. We love to see people coming to us, come in and have a cup of tea. You know, it can even be, I had three Americans called because they thought that they could come and visit the farm whatever time I was busy making silage. And I said, look, it's only half an hour. Come in and have a cup of tea. I'll never see them again. Mm-hmm. And I was happy to meet them and see them for half an hour.
I think the education thing is actually, it's not just farmers. I think it's rural Ireland. I come from Wicklow. I'm living down in Limerick, West Limerick, for the last 25, 6 years. And Wicklow, you know, there wouldn't have been the same push towards third level education because jobs were much more freely available. You could kind of get the bus up to Dublin and get jobs in insurance or mm-hmm. in the corporation or any sort of place like that. Down the West, you had to get an education. And I see it now. My children, the eldest two are 27 and the other fellow is 20. I mean, it was like in their primary school class, you were talking about nearly 100% participation in third level.
Yeah.
Because it was absolutely accepted. Now, the other thing you have in rural Ireland, which you do not have in Dublin, is you do not have school, you do not have class segregation. Everybody goes to the same community school. In Limerick now, all the kind of the girls' schools and the Christian Brothers schools and the VE schools, VEC, they're all big community schools. So it's this absolute mass education together. In Dublin, you really have nearly social segregation. You have the fee-paying schools and the non-fee-paying schools. And you know, there's very far different numbers there to going to third level.
You mentioned broadband earlier. Sorry for going across, Jim, and I think you move on to it, that transport is another huge issue.
Huge cost.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that farming and rural households get kind of done over with in the statistics is that we're two-car households. I mean, you can't both be a two-car household. If somebody's going off to a job in the morning, which more than nearly half farmers are, there has to be a car there to go to the shop to get the kids to school. The rural transport scheme, which was there for older people and which is still there, I mean, that's been an absolute boon to people. You know, they have the travel card, they've no transport into rural areas, and these are community buses that pick them up in their own houses, bring them to the village, they collect their pension, they go on to the local town, they're able to get a bit of wool or go out for a cup of coffee or meet a pal or go to the bank or go to the dentist without relying on someone in the family to bring them. And it's been an absolute boon all around the country. Ask a priest or a GP and he'll say, you know, the level of depression is so much less where you've got that kind of schemes. So simple things well done can make such a difference. And rural communities are absolutely brilliant at coming up with the ideas. One of the big problems now has been the closure of post offices and the closure of small shops. And what's happening all over the country, and Loughmore down in Tipperary led it, is the development of these community shops, where it's volunteers that are running the community service. And they're linking in with the big supermarkets because you can go online or send in your order. The order is dropped down to the little shop. It's a place for coming in for have a cup of coffee, whatever.
Yeah.
It's happening all around the country.
Yeah, we've got Declan Rice coming in tomorrow talking about that. And like, it's interesting what you mentioned about the post office as well, Mairead, because I mean their secret weapon will be when they have a network together, they will apply for post office services. So I mean that's another example of communities coming together and doing things.
And the credit union, the growth of the credit union right across the country, you know, hasn't made up fully for the closure of bank branches. But I mean, it's hugely important for young people, for older people, for people who are borrowing smaller amounts of money for cars or for a house extension or a holiday or the communion or whatever it is. I mean, the credit union is absolutely everywhere. So you can keep kind of singing a song which has rural Ireland. The descriptor for rural Ireland is a farmer with a heavy old coat and a bit of bale or twine around him who can't get down to the pub anymore and everything closing down. Or you can sing a totally different experience, which is about everything that's happening in rural development, community development, where active communities decide, we're not taking this, we're going to do something.
Okay, Mairead, I agree with you on a lot of that, but at the same time, the old fella with the bale and twine on his own and not able to go to the pub, they are still there. I know there is that picture
and
which we'd like
forever.
To...
And they're as prevalent in Portobello, in Rathmines, in Ranelagh.
Sure.
There's as many single-person households now in Dublin as anywhere across rural Ireland.
And of course, there are a lot of people that choose to live that way.
Yeah, but isolation is... You can be as isolated, surrounded by people in an apartment block, as you can be in the middle of the countryside.
Pat?
Yeah. Well, what
but you have a choice then, Mairead, though. You have
always.
The facilities
Look
locally.
At, what's this to say? You can't be driven mad without your active consent.
Yeah.
But what I would see is with the downturn, I think communities have got much more active in sort of focusing in on the important things in life. And just one example of that I would give you. If you go into a shop or a restaurant now, and the person behind the counter is much more friendly nowadays than they were when we were having the boom, They will make eye contact with you. The owner of the store has obviously trained them and picked his staff for this. And like, if you go to stores in other places around the world, it's not as friendly. And I know that from people that travel a lot to those places and come to Ireland, and they cannot believe the friendliness of the Irish people. Even an example of a neighbour of mine who has just recently come home from Canada. And they came in the bus from Dublin down to Kilbeggan. Everybody was chatting. When they're on a bus in Canada, everyone has their earplugs in and they're listening to something on their iPhone. So there's, you know, Irish people are different to most other communities, and they will talk to one another and help one another. So this, to me, is very evident across the counter.
Okay, going back, I don't want to leave the elf fellow with the bale and twine around his big coat alone for a while being. Talk to me a bit, like, Damien, about that scheme you were involved with the GAA, which was like speaking about that kind of isolation, that kind of loneliness in the community. Again, it's another example of a kind of a community-led project.
Well, actually, the genesis of this, to an extent, is thanks to the Farmers' Journal, because I had Matt Dempsey, erstwhile editor, in one day on my programme. I was saying, you know, what are the big issues facing rural Ireland? This is back during the boom years, when farming was being written off as a sunset industry, and, you know, good luck to that, and, you know, Ireland is booming and all of that, how things have changed. But anyway, I remember Matt saying, rural isolation is huge. And off air, he explained about doing a piece or being at a conference where he heard about a farmer in Kerry that had died and was dead for 3 days in his farmyard. And nobody knew about him because he didn't have visitors. And the only way somebody knew, they heard cows bawling. He was due to milk the cows, and the cows were roaring. And he was anyway. I went to Kerry, and I just couldn't believe. I was brought around the Black Valley by Joe McCrohan down there, who works in the community development, and the stories that he told me, and some of the people that he brought me to visit, who talked about going 2-3 days without seeing anybody, and how again the you know in at that stage the drink drive. Was an issue, was a debate, and the other local places closing down. Anyway, I did a report, and Martin McAleese, around the corner here, was listening to it and contacted me and said, look, this is a huge issue because the president Mary McAleese, whenever she goes to a community to open an event like this, it's only women, there's no old men. She said, this couldn't be true. You know, where are all the men? And it was basically that it was the psyche of the male not to get involved, whereas widows or women living on their own were more likely to get involved in local associations and clubs than the men. So anyway, the GEA Social Initiative was formed from that, where basically Martin McAleese put a committee together, approached the GEA, which I suppose has a foothold in every corner of the country, and has got GEA clubs involved in actually reaching out to a lot of older members or past members or people that they know that you know, could be more involved. And it is working to an extent. It's a very sensitive area because, you say, right, there are some people that are happy enough to live on their own, and you know, you don't approach somebody and say, I hear you're old and lonely, you live at the bottom of a lane, so we'd like to get you to come to the GA club once a week to play cards or whatever. But that it's working, the GA Social Initiative is going, but it's one of many such organisations. There's men sheds projects all over the country where people, as you said, in local communities are doing it for themselves and are reaching out to try and break the link between somebody that's active and then sliding into a late life of loneliness and isolation.
Every single thing you've mentioned today is all being kind of like, I mean, coming from the community, like, I mean, be it like me, what you're describing down in Limerick, be it like me, what you've done in Kilbeggan, be it that like GEA-led project. Like, I mean, where's the government in all this? I mean, you know, say that CEDRA thing that Pat Spillane's involved. I mean, there was 34 recommendations made in that. Is that just a file waiting on someone's desk to be, like, passed over again? Is there any initiative coming from government this? Or is it going to be, like, solely down to communities and individuals like yourself to do it?
Rural development happens with bottom up. It's bottom up. It's the communities. You can't impose stuff. If you get community buy-in, it's worth every government scheme going. Let the government keep out of the way of LEADER. Let local authorities let LEADER work on the way it has been and the whole social inclusion programme. Let government do the big stuff, which is getting broadband on the ground. I mean, there's major promises for 2016, 2018, 2020. If that's delivered on, that's going to make a huge difference because it means the tech companies can set up anywhere and we'll have the speeds to do it. You know, it means people can come home. If you're a garden designer, like we've had a garden up there now in bloom, a gold medal garden, we'd like to say. But if I'm down in Limerick and Fino Nulon, our designer, was trying to send me the plans, I couldn't get them. I couldn't send them back edits of it. You know, and that's not acceptable anymore. So many people have businesses in rural Ireland that are dependent on the good broadband.
Yeah.
And that's where the government needs to spend their resources.
Now, having said that, Mairead, and I'm a great defender of farmers, and as journalists, we have to be, of course, objective and down the middle, but I would always argue that, you know, the role that farming plays, particularly to people who are a bit, I don't know what the word is anyway, against farming, you probably don't understand, but I from years working on it, appreciate, as I said earlier on, the role that agriculture plays in rural Ireland. But having said that, you could say that the government, indirectly, via, you know, Brussels and our involvement there, they are doing something because they lobby very, very hard to maintain single, you know, farm payments and subsidies to farmers. And, you know, €3-4 billion of taxpayers' money flows into Irish farmyards every year to keep those businesses actually going. And, you know, Pat Lawler is involved in dry stock. If you had no other income and you were just working with the cattle or working with sheep, no matter how good you were, if you didn't have that single farm payment, you'd be out of business. It's what props up every farmer. I think it's 90% of farms in Ireland. If the single farm payment was taken away tomorrow, that subsidy from Brussels, they will be out of business because it costs more to produce milk and beef than they actually earn from it. So you could say that the government or politicians in general, by continuing that flow of capital into Irish farms, are doing something, because there's 120,000 farm families around the country.
They could also insist that the supermarkets publish their accounts.
Yeah.
None of the supermarkets in Ireland publish their accounts. We don't know what the margins they are. I mean, they get farmers' accounts. I was talking to Country Crest there. When you were a limited company, they were able to get the accounts in straight away, see exactly what the margins are, come in for more of it. Now, when the companies have gone unlimited, it's harder to get it. But next year, they're going to have to give over their accounts as well. There has to be full transparency. So what's required, really and truly, is not... I mean, the supports from Brussels are terribly important. But in the long term, what's required is absolute transparency when it comes to the final price. Mm. Farmers have their information out there in public. There's profit monitors. We know, everybody knows what we get for milk, what we get for a pound of beef. The whole lot of it is transparent. But what's not transparent is what happens up the food chain.
Should there be an appointment of a... I mean, Phil Hogan has talked about looking at this area of more transparency with the multiples. And we could begin with the appointment of a retail ombudsman. Is that there?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Or there's some other phrase for it. Somebody that can actually go in there and see what is going on. Because I think, you know, if you sell your beef to the factory and by the time we buy it, it's, you know, the margin has been made not by the farmer or the meat factory, although meat factories do well, but by the multiples.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is what probably has motivated me to start the businesses that I'm now involved in, is that, you know, if your product as a farmer and if you're proud of your product and it goes into the heap like everybody else's, you know, there's very little pride for you in that, and you can't ever say, well, look, was my crop great, but feck it, it went into the big heap with everyone else's and nobody cares. So from a job satisfaction point of view, that's not very good. So that was one of my motivating factors, to try and get my product out there directly to the consumer. So that for me now, getting feedback from that and enjoying being, you know, talking to you people here, which is brilliant, and being at the Borbia food pavilion over there, that job satisfaction for me has increased enormously, you know. So I'm a much happier farmer than I was.
Pardon? You've cut out the middleman.
You don't deal with supermarkets.
Insofar as I can, yeah. And I certainly have direct contact because of the internet now and broadband and email and all this. Customers can actually link directly with me. They can see my name in the packet, they can send me an email and say it was good, it was bad, or where can we get it, or whatever. So job satisfaction is hugely important, at least it is to me anyway. And if I'm doing a good job on my farm, I want the people that are eating my food to know about it and know where it came from.
Sure. Okay. So okay, let's round it off then by kind of going back where we started. Besides broadband, what are other things, like, just in one word kind of things, let's kind of recap what we're talking about here. The issues that need to be kind of addressed. Broadband is number one in your book anyway, right?
I just think if we're talking about outside of agriculture, I mean, there's a whole lot of issues within farming. But if you're talking about rural communities, rural development, getting jobs back into rural Ireland, broadband is as essential as electricity, full stop. Absolute end of story. I think you can also get consumed by a media attitude towards rural Ireland as being remote and isolated and all the rest of it. I just don't buy that. It's back to the same old talk of 5 years ago. Agriculture is a sunset industry. It's a brown asset. I mean, people bought into that bullshit. And absolutely no truth of whatever in it. You know, 10.5 billion exports, growing markets. If the Chinese, we've had the Premier of China here twice. If China, everybody in China was to have one bite of Irish beef, we wouldn't be able to supply the market. I mean, that's how big this can potentially be. So, like, you know, give it the air and the positivity that it needs, because we've got the product, we've now got the markets, and let's see where the potential can bring us.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with Mairead. You know, agriculture is great to see farming doing so well, and you mentioned, you know, exports and Borbia are doing a marvellous job promoting Irish food and what the likes of Pat does around the world. I think that's ticking along nicely at the moment, it would seem. Farmers will still complain, of course, Pat, about different issues, but in general, as long as the weather's okay, you know, in a lot of cases, that's the best head start that a farmer can get when he gets up in any morning. But outside of farming, I don't know what it is. Is it the Irish mentality? We got to go to the city of the big lights. Can we not make rural? I mean, rural Ireland is a really attractive place for, and so many people go and live there to bring up their families. No, you couldn't ask for better.
It's confidence.
Confidence and amenities and facilities. Amenities and facilities.
How do you get confidence? Through education.
Yeah.
Through travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then people have choices, because I take tours in my farm. And I take people training for organic, or that Chagas will bring them around, and I say, is organic any good? I say, it's grand, but you have to have a day job as well. So, yeah. And you won't have a day job unless you have education. Yeah. So it's education. Yeah. And I'm talking about necessarily, sorry, mate, but always qualification, education. That can
University of life as well,
correct.
As you say. Yeah.
Yes.
But it's also, again, you know, confidence. Yeah. There was a time when I was growing up at home, the only kind of cheese was Calvita. End of story. Do you know? And maybe a bit of cheddar. What the Irish farmhouse cheeses have done is an absolutely amazing story. All of a sudden, we discovered we have a craft beer industry. I don't know how many breweries there are around every parish this stage. We had only one whiskey distillery. There's something like going to be 62 whiskey distilleries in the country in the next couple of years. They're all in the pipeline. Like, we just get that confidence again that we can do all of these things. And we're as good as anybody in the world at it. And we've got a fantastic image. We're great on sustainability. And, you know, there's just this kind of, can be this whole negative message of what farming and agriculture is about. There's a whole pile of things that people want in this world. There's very little they need. And food is something they need three times a day, every single one of us.
Yeah, and just on that, Mairead, though, when I was saying about making parts of rural Ireland more attractive, and as you said, confidence, that people have the confidence to say, well, actually, I don't have to move to a semi-detached house in Dublin to be able to live a good life, you know. But the problem is, how are you going to attract companies to actually locate in parts of rural Ireland where they know that they're not going to have a workforce? So it's a chicken and egg situation there, which I think the back on that needs to be broken, because if you're in a rural part of Roscommon or Leitrim or Cavan or whatever, and the population is dwindling, you're not going to really have a good chance of...
If you can pay €150,000 for a four-bedroom house on its own plot of ground.
Well, it's things like, you know? that even applies to kind of like the cities outside Dublin. I mean, somewhere like Galway, for example, is a really interesting startup community going on going there. And they're finding companies are moving to Galway because the broadband actually in Galway is quite decent. And as you've just kind of pointed out, the price of houses is way less than in the capital.
Yeah.
And I mean, we saw with the Home to Vote campaign, the number of young people who would give anything to come home. But I mean, it's part of the business, employing two or three people. It's every two or three, all of a sudden it supports a cafe, it supports another shop.
Yeah.
That's
the point, yeah.
It's the businesses support more businesses. Mm. And it's the, you know, we can really turn our face and see what's coming as a train.
I know.
But it can be a... You know.
As this discussion goes on, we think of more things, and I know you want to finish, but one thing that we haven't, the elephant in the room, and it's a great success story for rural Ireland as well, is tourism. You know, tourism, again, apart from agriculture, for an awful lot of parts of rural Ireland, you mentioned Kilbeggan there, tourism is huge, and if we can continue to increase the numbers of tourists, you know, travelling around the country, again, there's hotels, restaurants, pubs that survive on a buoyant tourism industry, especially this time of the year. So there's a lot more to it than agriculture, of course.
Okay, we'll definitely come back to this. So anyway, right now, thank you very much. Thank you, Mairead. Thank you, Pat. And thank you, Damien. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thanks a million to our three panellists for joining us at Banter, and big thanks to Rosa Shocknessy and all our team at Borbia for their work at Bloom. This podcast was produced by Banter series producer Tanya White. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate us and spread the word. Tell your friends about us, recommend us on your favourite social media network, leave a review or a rating on the iTunes store, and don't forget to subscribe. You can check out thisisbanter.com for news of what we're up to at Banter, and we'll be back next week with another podcast. On then, goodbye and take care.